The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. There we go. My headphones are very, very quiet. It sounds like I'm in a world of my own.
Oh, no, you're in my world,
again,
too.
Again. you are joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's Bob.
We got two fun topics today. Kind of similar, but sort of different, I guess. First one is with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He was the ambassador to the Vatican for, I cannot see that at the moment because my stupid computer is at 86% updated. It has this little note, your PC will restart several times. I'm like, oh, no. I got caught in the update loop right before we left the house.
It just updates when it feels like it.
Yeah, right. Something happened, right before we left the house. I turned it on. It's
Microsoft looking out for you. Yeah, they know what's best.
Yeah, they're destroying me. So anyway, hey, good. You've got your computer up. The ambassador, he's a busy guy. He is involved with all sorts of stuff. Actually, you would not believe... I will read all the organizations here. But in the meantime... So what's going on, Bob? What's been going on this morning? We didn't hear the news at all. Anything good?
To my knowledge, no major earth-shaking developments.
No one touched
anyone? I'll be honest, I didn't listen to the news because I was busy doing stuff that producers do between breaks at the top of the hour.
All right, forget that then. let's see. Francis Rooney here, he was one of the long line of really great ambassadors to the Holy See. I know it had all this information on here. His book, The Global Vatican, captures the interwoven nature of religious and political power in the complexities, battles, and future prospects for the relationship between the Holy See, which is the Pope, and the Vatican, and the United States, as both face challenges old and new. And I know lately people are bugged about different stands that the Pope has taken, as am I. I wanted to click to his bio here because it's kind of interesting. He was 2005 to 2008. I knew it was in the George Bush administration, George W. Bush. But he's involved in all sorts of things at this time. He performs research and advocacy on foreign affairs, political strategy, and economic issues. He's a trustee of the Center of the Study of the Presidency in Congress. He's a member of the Council of American Ambassadors, a director for the Trust of the National Mall and Crossroads GPS. All those things are in Washington, D.C. He previously served on the 2020 committee in the Washington Advisory Council for the Center on International Studies. So it wasn't like, he swooped in and was like an ambassador for a couple of years and then, went away.
Oh, no.
Didn't do any more politics.
No, I've seen him on Fox lots of times.
He is on Fox lots of times. He runs a company with his kids. It's Rooney Holdings. It's a diversified investment company and also a Manhattan construction group, which is engaged in the general building, roads, bridges, pipelines, and specialty construction. So he's just like, I was reading that the other day. I thought, I don't think I've ever read this really long version of the bio.
Oh, don't forget, advisory board of the Panama Canal. That's important.
That's pretty fun. Where was he with Grenada, the war to end all wars?
the mother of all wars?
Yeah. The war to end all wars. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the article. Let's go back. Well, we're kind of waiting for him to call. It's funny. The title of the article was, Is This War Yet? It's an article in The Hill. He does commentary in a bunch of different publications, but this one happened to come out in The Hill. And really criticizes the Obama administration with their little...
We're going to give them a talking to.
And their inability to say Islamic extremism, and...
Oh, they're shaking in their tennis shoes, I can guarantee
you. Well, they don't say Islamic anything, do they?
No, try not to.
Do they ever say Islamic something?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah, not helpful. So he feels like that sort of thing, he thinks the same thing the rest of us do, that that sort of thing is going to lead to more and more and more problems and give them more and more power, actually. If we starved them out on the money, which we didn't do because we did the Iran deal and gave them a ton of money, I think we'd have a hand up.
Oh, yeah. Starve them out on the money. Isolate them from other countries. Isolate all the countries that are basically supporting them and put them in their own little box. Pretty soon they're going to get hungry. You know? And they're going to stick their heads up. And then it's like whack-a-mole.
And then we can maybe do something. This is kind of frightening. The note that's now flashing across my computer screen is, all in real big print, all your files are exactly where you left them.
That's nice. Because otherwise, where would they be?
What does that mean? All your files are exactly where you left them. Yeah, they're behind this blue page that doesn't seem to want to go away. What the heck? You know, why is it that your computer only wants to update when you need it? I feel like I've got my hands tied behind my back.
Bottom line is, I think if Ambassador Rooney had a little more hand in this administration, I think they would be much more inclined to make some right moves. Because right now, we're not doing anything really of any consequence to stem the flow of these folks or the violence that they're bringing to the world. And it's not just the United States. It's look at what's happened in France and Germany and you know everywhere. These guys are definitely expanding, and someone's got to step up and put a stop to it.
It's interesting because it's always bad when the French seem powerful.
Well, they're leading the way, you know, and we'd be glad to follow. I mean, because that's what we do now is we follow the French.
We follow the French.
Vive la France!
How scary is that?
I think all that's left now is we just need to get some little knickers and some little berets, and we'll blend right in. You know? Yeah. It's a true story.
Don't make me choke.
Yeah. We've already got the blue helmets, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we could send in the UN. That would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now my computer says we've got some new features for you to get excited about. Don't turn off your PC. What is? Is my computer, held hostage?
Yeah. It's Bill Gates knows you're on the air.
I just wanted to turn on.
He's controlling you.
Here's the picture.
You don't like being controlled, do you?
No.
No.
I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden my all my resources are locked behind your files are exactly where you left them. It seems kind of maniacal to me.
We know where your files are.
We know where they are, and you can't have them.
We have ways of hiding your files.
We will give you this scary blue screen.
So you're saying without your files,
I'm nothing.
You're not Aaron.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm nothing.
That's too bad. It is nice to know, though. That could come in handy later down the road.
And then hour two today. Yeah. you will forget everything you've seen today.
Yes,
hypnotize. What happens
me.
In the radio
you
studio
will not remember.
Stays in the radio studio. let's see. So the second half we're talking about guns.
Yeah.
It seemed kind of fitting.
Yeah. Local.
Well, we're gonna have the sheriff come in.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have him talk about how well, you know, gun what do you call it? Gun control.
Gun control.
Not the kind where you use two hands, but the other kind where they take everything away. How gun control works across the country and how you know, not successful that is.
Yeah, maybe we could talk about some of the new laws that are coming in January.
And
I did hear the other day that there's several gun manufacturers that aren't coming back to California.
A big surprise.
Due to the excessive regulations and requirements that they need to follow. They're saying, you know what, California just isn't that big of a market. And we'll just sell our guns somewhere else.
Besides that, every time we get excited about them, we make all these changes, then they make some law that jams us up. And
yeah, so if you've got your eye on a gun that's available today, you might want to buy it because it may not be available in January. So, yeah, it's just getting better, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
And I think that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. We need to take a really quick break, but Bob has not given me the high sign yet. Are you giving me the high sign?
Oh, he just gave you the finger.
I've got
the index finger.
I was going to say.
Thanks for clarifying that, Bill.
Yeah, and then Carl and Linda come racing in.
What the finger?
We'll
that was
be
the
right.
Fickle finger of fate.
Of fate, yes.
Yeah.
We'll be right back, and just remember, my files are right where I left them.
Where are your
files? Annoying. And if you have a computer that works and you'd like to go to wethepeopleradio.us, it's where all the archives are, and information about the show today, and information about us, in case you want to send us, probably want to send us hate mail today, maybe you shouldn't go to the site. Probably not good.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? Time is truly wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making. We gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices.
We went funkarelic right there.
We did, too.
Boy.
Got your quota of funk this morning.
Yow.
Or this afternoon. Why do I keep saying morning? It's because it feels like morning, because things are fouled up. So anyway, we thought the ambassador was calling us, but I guess we were supposed to call him. And,
yeah. He's going, what a bunch of chuckleheads. Yeah, they don't ever call on time.
Good grief. So now we're getting that handled.
Yeah, so...
I forgot. I looked at you, and then I forgot what I was going to say.
That happens a lot.
It was right there. It was
they
right
all,
there, and it went away.
They get all starry-eyed, and then everything blanks out. Man, I hate that.
Oh, and I hate Microsoft, because my computer still isn't working properly.
Oh, I'm sure. Sorry about that.
I was going to remind people of something, but I can't.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So... I was just going to see if I could pressure you into saying something. You know, Bill is deeply committed to being the sidekick, which I find really, really irritating. What would happen? I used to do that to Elizabeth all the time. I'd stop talking, and she.
I think what's happened is as I was, I read this this article that Francis Rooney wrote, and right at the beginning of it, there's a picture of Obama, and I'm looking at a picture of him, and I'm seething. I think it just should. It shouldn't be on
he
there.
He doesn't have
turn
a,
it over.
He doesn't have a mustache.
Oh, I put a little mustache on in there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
oh gosh,
yeah. So his last talk, I really, you know, when he had this big talk to the nation, he basically said he's going to give him a talking to. We're going to get serious about this.
I think he said he was giving us a talking to.
No. He's gonna let ISIL know that
yeah.
we are going to start talking tough.
Because bottom line is,
stop.
We are the ones who are hateful.
That's right. But no, we're gonna get down and dirty with the talk now. So they are shaking in their tennies.
I left him a voicemail.
Oh.
Oh, good.
I wondered who you were talking to over there. Huh.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, this is just getting better and better. You know, this is the thing when you kinda have a bunch of other stuff going on and you have a plan that isn't the plan. Yeah.
We've been having a rash of that lately though.
I know. I
don't get it.
I know.
It's like we're going to have to lay the rules down.
I think people are stressed.
I think so.
Can I have my paper over there, please?
Tis the season to be stressed.
It really is.
Fa-la-la-la-la. La-la-la.
No, you know, I've noticed that people are driving very erratically.
Yes. I love shopping nowadays. We were in a big line yesterday. We went to a business here in town. I won't mention the name. But usually it's quick in, quick out. But, of course, yesterday it was... I started to walk up to the counter to get checked out, and I turned around and looked, and I had actually cut into the front of a line with about 15 people in it, and I got some really dirty looks. I didn't know people could give you those kind of looks legally. So I immediately, you know, walked around the aisle and got to the back of the line, and I thought, wow, for these few little items I'm buying, and I have to stand in line here for the next 10 minutes, what am I doing?
Was this the one where everybody, where the line was actually in the rows of merchandise and no one could tell it was a line?
Yes.
It just looked like
yes.
there was some sort of a free cheese yeah. giveaway right yeah. going on right
and,
in there.
And then right before we left, as we were checking out, I turned and looked and a lady walked up right behind us. And as we walked away, she cut in front of everybody. She didn't see the line. And she just walked up and checked out. And I thought, wow, maybe that's what I should have done. And, boy, you want to talk about dirty looks. I'm not sure she made it out of there alive.
Tis the season took on a whole new meaning?
Yes, it did. Yeah. I think there were.
But how would you know?
It was like a food fight when we left. There were things being thrown. And
brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like that everywhere.
I know.
Everywhere you go, people are very stressed out and just ugly.
We did. Oh, my gosh. What?
He's on.
Nice. Ambassador Rooney?
Yes.
What'd you say?
He's here.
Oh, I thought he said he was checking his computer. I'm like, don't do that. That hasn't gone well for me this morning. don't do it. Microsoft did some giant update. You'll never get to your computer. Oh, my gosh.
Well, how are you this afternoon, sir?
Great. How are you all doing?
Well, we're
getting off to a rough start, but, boy, I'll tell you what, it's going to be smooth sailing from here.
Oh, you know how some days you have a plan and then you just don't have a plan all of a sudden?
Yeah, that happens to me a lot.
Well, we were reading a list of your projects, and I can't imagine having all those spinning plates in the air. No wonder you have some crossover. So we were calling you, obviously, about your article in The Hill this time. So how do we get this president to actually realize what's going on? Or do you think he's just basically trying to help him?
You know, I would prefer to think that he's not trying to help our enemies, and I don't think he really is. But I think it's troublesome for him to deal with the whole Muslim thing.
Yeah, why is that?
And at the end of the day, this is Muslim, Islamic-inspired terrorism. And everyone else in the world seems to get it, but the President of the United States.
Well, and it always comes up that he's probably Muslim, and then all of a sudden there's this whole big thing about, no, he isn't. And it always makes me laugh, because if it's not bad to be Muslim, why do they deny it like somebody just called him something nasty?
Yeah, it would be better for him to use his Muslim heritage to be constructive, like Pope Benedict was, and say, you all need to mutate and modify your behaviors to come into consonance with the modern world and adapt the Quran to the way the people live in the 21st century. He could be very constructive if he wanted to be.
Yeah, instead he just chooses it. I don't even know if it's turning a blind eye.
No, he's not turning a blind eye. I think he's just not wanting to recognize what the real problem is. It doesn't want to name it for what it is. And I'm not sure how that's supposed to make it go away or fix anything.
Well, history shows that appeasement and ignoring a problem will not make it go away. It will actually embolden our enemies.
Yeah, it sure has, too.
Yeah, and if you look at what's happening, obviously that is the outcome. Is it has emboldened these guys, and now they're, well, we knew they were here anyway. I don't think anybody, you know, I guess there might have been a few people left, but I think most people realized that they are here. And once
They're here in Michigan, they're here in all kinds of areas where they're in potentially sleeper cells, you know, that mm-hmm. we don't know. This thing in California could have been a two-person sleeper cell, you know. And we're going to have to figure out who is being radicalized, who's going to imams in the United States, who is checking radicalization sites, you know, where they teach you how to make bombs and things like that. And we're going to have to monitor all that.
Well, you know, your article, you mentioned some pretty good ideas on how to handle this situation as far as, you know, international solutions. How do we handle this on a local level as far as these radicalized folks? I mean, how do we get a handle on that and control them or identify them? Any ideas?
Well, you know, it's very difficult in the United States to square surveillance and abridgments of freedom with the Fourth Amendment. And the only way to justify that is in a war condition where you are confronting a threat which is supernumerary. And if we could declare war on these guys, then it may be, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but it may be that we could muster a way to interdict radical teachers in the United States and send them away. Get them out of the country, okay? Or and certainly make sure that we track people that go to radical teachers' mosques, and we follow who's going to them, and we follow who is going on radicalizing websites where they teach you how to make bombs and talk about how you're going to be saved by Allah if you do a suicide bomb and kill some people and all that kind of stuff. We're going to have to dig deeper, but you can only do it, I think, under the guise that we're in war.
Right. And yeah. And that's not, you know, as far as identifying them and send them out of the country, that's not a new idea. We've done that before, haven't we?
Oh, we've done it before a lot. I mean, look at World War II.
Right.
Yeah.
We contained Germans. We contained Japanese. We sent people out of the country. We made sure that no one could get into our country from countries with whom we were fighting.
And do you think
do we allow people from Syria and Iraq to fly to the United States?
Exactly. And do you think people just don't realize we're rapidly approaching that same footing, that this is not a whole lot different than when we were at war, you know, during World War II, when we took these same measures? I think a lot of people are saying, "Oh, this is, we're just all blowing this up out of proportion, and it's too much." But it's not, is it?
No, I don't think it is. I think vis-a-vis radicalized, dangerous Islamic terrorists, we are at war.
Right.
And we have to do everything that we would do against Nazi Germany or Japan in 1942 to them.
Yeah, the title of your article, I think, was important. Is this war yet? You know, because we basically keep saying that as a society, it's like, is this enough?
Yeah, what's going to be enough? What's going to push that button where people actually realize that we are at that point where we have to take some drastic measures? I mean, look what Trump said last week, and everybody, the media, the GOP, everybody came down on him. But when they took a breath and stood back and looked at what he really meant, he's not that far off the mark.
Well, and Jimmy Carter sent back all those students, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're there. I mean, these folks are here, and it's going to continue unless we do some pretty drastic stuff. And I don't think shutting down our borders is too drastic, do you?
Well, you know, if you think about if they were Nazi Germany, what would we be doing? Well, we wouldn't let anybody from there fly to here.
Right.
Okay. We would be interdicting people that try to come to the United States from Germany. We would be making sure that we knew everybody that was a German sympathizer that was in the United States, that we had a file on them, and we were checking them, and we were following them.
Right.
And that would help a lot. That might have helped with the people in San Bernardino.
Well, the visa process obviously failed in that case.
You totally lock that kind of thing down. Mm-hmm. You have to. And
but they're resisting
Then with what happens over in Iraq and Syria, is I think you have to say, look, nobody's going to go in and out of there. No airplanes are going to leave from radical held areas. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
No, we can stop countries from allowing airplanes to land from radicalized areas.
And then how do you I mean, track these folks? I mean, they could fly from Syria to Turkey to Germany to England to the United States. There's got to be a way to track something like that, isn't there?
Because some of those don't – they have kind of open borders over there, or are they stopping – they're stopping that. Some of them are.
Well, you know, you think about, okay, what if you just said – if you recognize that both Iraq and Syria – have devolved into three different states. They've devolved into the Kurdish one, which we can embrace because they're our allies and nurture. They've devolved into the Shiite part, which in Syria is called Alawite, and they're not our allies. They're allied with Iran. And then there's the Sunni part, which has been partly dominated by ISIS and Al-Qaeda and partly dominated by some theoretically secular Sunnis who are not part of those other things. I'm not sure about all that. But the fact is, if we could isolate just the Sunni part, where the really bad guys are, then we could focus on them. And don't let them out of there.
Right.
Yeah. Because until we do that, we're just going to continue to... Well, we're not the only... Obviously, not the only ones having a problem. The people over there are having huge problems. And the Christian persecution's off the charts. Why is it... Why do you think that there's such a reluctance to acknowledge that?
Well, I don't know why the president won't acknowledge Christian persecution. It's been going on for years now, and it continues to become worse and worse. And I don't know. He has almost a mental inability to say the word Christian, which bothers me quite a bit.
Yeah, it's funny. He really doesn't say it, does he?
No.
I didn't really think about that. Not only does he not help him, you know, he doesn't really talk about it.
But I think our answer is to focus on the bad guys. And our direct enemies are the ISIS and Al-Qaeda cells in Sunni Syria and Sunni Iraq. And if we could start by containing them, then we could deal with the Syrians later. Because the Syrians and the Shiite Iraqis are basically part of Iran now, and there's very little we can do about it. But we could at least stop the other part.
Sure. And, you know, we've got to take a really quick break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the cover that they have with the mosques and all that. And now we're finding that, you know, a lot of these mosques have weapons in them, and, you know, that's where the radical materials come from and all that. How do we square that with religious freedom? You are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online, provided your computer has updated, at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. That's really kind of the problem. I've said too much, and I haven't said enough. We see that all the time with this particular issue. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with former Ambassador Francis Rooney, and he's written a really good article called Is It War Yet? Or Is This War Yet? And you could find that in The Hill. You've also got it on our website. Okay, so Ambassador, what's the deal with the mosques as you see it? I mean, how do we religious freedom thing, but then not make them stockpiles for weapons and materials?
Well, in France, you know, they found all these weapons in these mosques.
That's kind of where I was going.
Yeah.
Not to France, but...
You got to sit back and say, wait a minute, you know, what side of the line are they on? Are they on the side of the line of the 21st century, where we have the secular state, which tolerates all different faiths and peacefully allows people to express their faith? Or are they on the old side of the line, which is rooted in the 9th or 8th century and wants to apply Sharia law and to kill innocent people? And I think that's kind of a fault line that we're going to have to deal with here.
Well, it doesn't really seem like it's just a matter of time. It seems like if we wait long enough, it all turns out that that they're just sandbagging us.
Well,
that happens over and over again.
They're sandbagging us, and we aren't really, I think, going in the right direction as far as screening them either. I mean, I was watching the other day, I forget which program I was watching, but they showed some of the questions that are on the entry form or the visa form, It was, are you a terrorist? Have you ever been a terrorist? Do you plan on participating in terrorism? And do you support anybody that could be a terrorist? Well, who in their right mind is going to answer those questions incorrectly? And why are they even on the form? Is that the best we can do for a screening process?
I think we need a much more deep psychological analysis of these people, and we need to monitor what they do. We need to monitor what websites they go on. We need to monitor what mosques they go to. And there may be some imams that are perfectly benign, that are secular, like going to the Catholic Church or the Presbyterian Church or whatever. But there's a lot of imams that are not. 86% of imams in the United States are foreign-born. And over 25% of them have at one time or another actively spoken out against the United States way of life. So we have a cancer within us. You know, Robert Kennedy wrote a book called The Enemy Within, and he wrote it about Jimmy Hoffa and the labor unions. But I think we have an enemy within right now, which is equally insidious, and that we have to confront, which is cells of people who are not in sync with our secular state in America.
So when we call them on it, you know, we have a detail of places they've been, things they've been researching online, whatever it is, and then they scream, "Well, you're persecuting me because I'm Muslim." Then we fold our tent immediately.
Instead of saying we are asking you what you are. We're asking you, what kind of Muslim are you? And that's our right to do that, given all the things that are going on in the world today. Are you a secular Muslim who's willing to live with all the other faith traditions in our country and live with the separation of church and state that is a hallmark of the United States of America? Or are you bent on trying to bring our state down and kill our people? We have to figure that out. We have to confront that and draw that fault line.
Right, and we have to figure out a way to get the right answer to that question, because they're not going to give it to us. They're going to tell us exactly what we want to hear, and we're going to be right back to where we are now. I mean, we have to have a much more aggressive screening process to find out who these folks are before they get here.
See, France and Spain, after the Charlie Hebdo attacks, the third Charlie Hebdo attacks, because the first two happened while I was serving in Rome. 2005 and 2008, and now the last one happened just last year. They've adopted measures to try to intervene and surveil people that go on radicalizing websites. And we're going to have to figure out some way to square that with the Fourth Amendment, whether it's called a wartime powers or what. We're going to have to know who's going on radicalizing websites and who's going to radical mosques teaching and follow them.
Well, so much of what Islam teaches, I mean, bottom line is you have to deem it radical. You know, their own, you know, quote, religion is a political ideology. So I think that's part of, besides the fact that I think the president, you know, he's got his own whole set of problems. But even beyond that, I think that makes it 10 times harder.
Yeah, you know, the Koran's a very complicated sentence. They call them shiras, the chapters, you know.
Okay.
And the early ones are quite pastoral, and the later ones are quite hegemonic, if you will. And there's a lot of analogies to the Koran and the Old Testament. But what Islam needs to have to live in the 21st century is some type of reformation. You know, they need a New Testament, or they need a Protestant Reformation, or they need something to enable them to put behind all the radicalism and the harshness, and be willing to live with everybody else in the 21st century. Otherwise, we're going to have a continual struggle with them. We might as well face it.
Yeah, I don't see any way that we do this, because if at the end of the day, the belief is that they need to take us over because we all need to think like they think, that the world is still messed up until we all think like they do, there's really no middle ground for that. There's no way that you all peacefully live together if the ultimate goal is to beat us into submission.
Yeah, until they drop the hegemonic and aggressive parts of Sharia law and the Quran, we can't live with them.
So how,
take them out.
So how, just, you know, you've dealt with, you know, world of events and affairs and different cultures and stuff. I mean, my small viewpoint on it, you know, for my little vantage point, I don't see that ever happening. Do you think that's even possible?
I think what's possible is that we surveil in the United States as if they were a wartime belligerent and narrow their field of action into who they are and ultimately drive them out, and that we contain, confine, contain, and then ultimately eradicate in the ISIS and Al-Qaeda areas of Sunni Syria and Iraq. Meanwhile, I think you just, if you focus on those areas and you just, you know, let Iran have what Iran's earned and reinforce the Kurds, who are our biggest helpers, I think there's a way to do this. I think there's the analogy there is former Yugoslavia, where everybody kind of self-sorted into their own ethnicities.
Mm, yeah, true.
And the bad guys were dealt with differently than the good guys.
Yeah, I read an article about the Kurds the other day. They've 20% or something are women, and I guess the ISIS guys are freaking out because if they get killed by a woman, then they don't get their afterlife program that they've been touting. So I guess these Kurdish women are they're really enjoying the whole situation. It's kind of an extra thumb in the eye, I guess, from their culture. I thought, you know, it's one way to make a war more entertaining, I guess.
They're doubly empowered.
Mm-hmm. They really are. I should find it and stick it on the website today. I don't even remember where I saw it, but it was a great video, and I thought, you go, girls. They were very large and in charge. Hey, we have to take one more quick break, and then, oh, I guess we don't. Bob's not only not giving me the high sign, he's giving me the shaking head. I thought I was tardy. What do I know? This isn't my day to be all over it. Oh my gosh.
Ambassador, in your article you had some ideas on how we stop these guys or at least slow them down on the international front. Maybe you could share some of that with our listeners.
Well, we continue to speak of boundaries of Iraq and Syria as if it was 1916 when the Sykes-Picot Treaty established them. And I think we have to look at today and say, wow, you know, we have these tribal derivations that have taken place. The Kurds have stepped up and have basically formed a country that we won't recognize yet, but it would be in our interest to do it. And the Iranians and the Shiite Iraqis, since unfortunately President Obama let al-Maliki turn the whole country over to the Shiites, they have their area, the eastern half of Iraq. And of course, you have Bashar's Alawite allies of the Shiites there in Syria. So I say, look, take the Sunni areas where al-Qaeda and ISIS are, and where there are some non-radicalized Sunnis as well, and let's focus on them. And mm-hmm. Let the other guys go their own way. And that way we can contain them and confine them. And ultimately, I think if you can't contain someone and focus in on them, then how are you going to eradicate them? That was the essence of our policy with the Soviet Union, you know, that we contained them, waiting until the day that we could eliminate them.
Yeah, and I don't. It's interesting. I guess we do have to take a break here, and Bob actually did give me the high sign. Perhaps when we come back. I'd be really curious to know how you think we can best do that in this country and what just regular people can do, you know, folks that, you know, don't have any special connections or special skills, but it's going to take all of us to kind of root this out, you know, where's the pressure need to go first and how do we do it?
That's a really good question.
Yes. All right. You have 2 minutes to think about it.
Oh, no, I have. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, good. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back with Ambassador Francis Rooney. We're talking about ISIS and the global caliphate and blah, 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 all that bad stuff. Here's some fun music for you.
Christmas Eve. Some folks say there's no such thing as Santa, but now even the Taliban believe. Osama thought we'd never find him, but even little children know. Santa knows who's been real naughty in those hard Afghani mountains capped with snow. Al-Qaeda found him Christmas morning, face down on that mountain pass. There were hoof marks on his turban and a broken reindeer antler up his
Osama. Oh. I was wondering where we were going with that.
Boy.
Nice, Bob. Where'd you find that little gem?
That's courtesy of Bob Rivers' Twisted Christmas series.
Oh, of course. Why didn't I know that?
Yeah, tis the season, Bob.
Okay, so my serious question about what can regular people do besides mocking them?
Yeah.
Obviously, we have that part down. So what do you think, Ambassador? The rest of us have do we have a project we can do?
Well, I think our system of democracy is based upon every citizen speaking up for what they think is right, being politically engaged, and defending their rights. And when our citizens don't do that, we have problems. We have some of them right now. So I think that we need to resist political correctness. You know, when you see this pabulum in the press, as they say, well, we don't want to insult any Muslims or something. Well, I think you have to say, wait a minute. Until you people take command of your religion, as Pope Benedict suggested, and become part of the solution for the degradation of your religion, then we're going to look at all of you guys with a bit of a skeptical eye, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say to any Muslim. I would say it's incumbent upon you to speak up and attack the people that are corrupting your religion. You're the front line of defense. It's your religion, not mine. Mine's Catholic.
Don't you think it's interesting, though, that they really don't? That the guys you hear from all the time are the CARE guys and, you know, the ones that are basically... terrorist front organization or something?
Yeah, it's no huge secret that CARE and Muslim American Foundation have been infiltrated by Muslim Brotherhood from day one. And so they're a little bit tarnished. There may be some more objective Muslim groups that I don't know about, but I do know about CARE and Muslim American Foundation.
Yeah.
I don't trust them a bit. But what we need is average Muslims to come out and speak up. And there have been a few. There was a great op-ed last year by an Egyptian Muslim who's in the Washington Post who said, this is not my Islam. But we need thousands more to stand up and say, we are into render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and render under God what is God's. We are willing to live in the secular modern state. And we need them to step up and say that.
You're absolutely right. You know, and I've said that for a long time. The problem right now is, you're right. There are some Muslims out there that are saying the right things, but there's so few of them. They're getting kind of shouted down by the people that don't believe it, and it's hard to trust them when, you know, there's these thousands and thousands of them over here, and you only hear of a few that are saying, "Oh, that's not really us." Well,
it kind of sounds like it is the way they believe, and until a whole lot more start speaking up and actually doing something about it, I think the American people are going to have a hard time believing even the good guys.
Yeah, because every time there's one appeaser, you know, that offsets a lot of really good people that might want to speak out.
It does.
And so I think we have to stop appeasing and call the elephant, as Secretary Colin Powell used to say, the elephant in the room. We have to call out the elephant in the room. And if people are going to appease that, then they need to be called out, because that's not going to get it, okay? Confronting the doctrines of Islam versus the way we live in the 21st century is the only way out. And we have to figure out who's in and who's out.
Yeah, because, well, let's face it, London decided to give him a whole segment of the city, and that hasn't worked out well. You know,
it hasn't worked out well at all. And I remember speaking with Tony Blair about that in 2007. And I said, this is a really bad thing you're doing here, is allowing Sharia law to be practiced in the Pakistani ghettos of London. That is not good. There is no place for Sharia law in the modern United States.
No.
That little missile you heard in the background was a news story.
Yeah, no, they don't mix. And they never will mix. And these guys that say, well, and they've done that in England. They've allowed certain areas to be ruled by Sharia, and look where that's gotten them.
Yeah, you can't be half in, half out with this deal. Ambassador, we're really sorry we missed the front half of the show with you because of my stupidity and lack of technology today. That's very unfortunate. But we hope you'll fire off another article to The Hill or some other publication. Keep us posted, and we'll chat about it with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, and I wish you all a great afternoon.
Thanks a million. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All righty. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about guns with the sheriff. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. So the first half was there was some bungling at the beginning. Sorry about that. And then chatted about ISIS and all that, and about all the bad things going on now. So it seemed only right that the second half we should chat about guns and Second Amendment and people's ability to defend themselves. And there are a lot of variations on what's being said out there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fear right now, too, of our administration taking our guns away, an executive order, which I've heard both sides of that it's legal, it's not legal. Let's talk about that, too.
Yeah, because we have a lot of gun grabbers out there. So we thought we'd bring in the sheriff, because he would actually know this.
Good morning.
Be your job to know the law.
Good morning, Tom.
So we have Tom Basenko on here, who is the Shasta County Sheriff, and for those of you that are listening on the East Coast, he is in far, far northern California.
Yeah, about a couple, 3 hours north of Sacramento, which is our state capital.
Yep. Actually, we're halfway in between Medford, Oregon, and Sacramento.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically.
Okay, I was going to say, so we could go either way, but they already think that about California, so I probably shouldn't bring that up. And that's not so prevalent up here. All right, so you are a big concealed weapons permit. People call them different things in different places.
Some of them,
I know,
call them concealed carry. Some call them CCW, concealed carry weapons, or concealed carry licenses.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually a license in California. Some refer to it as permit. And within California, the chief of police in incorporated cities or sheriffs may issue concealed weapon licenses. It is regulated by the state. There's about a 30-page application you have to fill out. And you have to receive training. So if it's your first time concealed weapons permit, you have to get about
takes a while.
Anywhere from 8 to 16 hours of training, and that's certified.
And then you have to sit down with one of your deputies.
Here in Shasta County.
For a period of time.
Yes. And then also, California is a may-issue state. It's not a shall-issue state. And what that means is it's at the discretion of the chief of police or the sheriff of the county on what they may issue. You also have to state a good cause. In Shasta County, that good cause is self-defense or personal protection and the protection of others, and to comply with the law. In other counties, it's a lot more stringent.
Like you have to carry money or be a business owner or...
But weren't they trying to change that shall issue? Wasn't there
they
some
were.
Legislation just recently?
Excuse me. In fact, there's a court case, two court cases, that should be heard sometime after the first of the year by the 9th District Court of Appeals, a federal court. And that is the Peruta case, Peruta v. San Diego County Sheriff, and the Richards case, which is Richards v. Ed Prieto and Yolo County Sheriff. And that was, they felt that they had stated a good cause, they were denied, and they've taken it to court. The 9th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled on it, but it was actually kind of a middle-of-the-road ruling, didn't give any clarification, and so they're going to go to an en banc hearing by the 9th Circuit, which means there will be at least 12 justices that will hear the argument regarding those cases.
Okay.
And so I know there are a lot of counties in California and probably all over the country that really don't issue.
That's correct. We have about 58 counties in we do have 58 counties in California. Shasta County, we have about 177,000 population, and I have about 6,700 to 6,800 concealed weapons permits. In other counties, like if you took the combined population of Alameda, Contra Costa, Santa Clara, and San Francisco counties, all in the Bay Area, you're looking at millions in population, but they only issue less than 200 permits combined out of all those counties.
Holy cow. Mm-hmm.
I think San Francisco has one or two. I believe the county of Los Angeles has approximately 1,200. But that, you're looking at millions in population.
And much less crime, too, because they don't have as many guns on the street.
Yeah, keep thinking that. Bill's being a little sarcastic there. But
All their criminals are fully armed.
Yeah. Because that's the first thing they think about is it's against the law to carry a gun, so I won't carry one.
Because we always make laws for criminals because they follow.
And our concealed weapons permit is good throughout the state of California.
Right. And so why do you think it's a good idea?
It should be a personal choice by the person that chooses to get a concealed weapons permit. That comes with a lot of responsibility on carrying. They have to, of course, get the training, and then they have to have the makeup, the mental part of their makeup has to be, they have to be prepared that perhaps they could end up taking another human life, and that's a huge responsibility there. And then they can't drink, if they're carrying, because they have to keep about their faculties as well. They have to be a responsible gun owner, and they have to get training every couple of years. It's a matter of self-protection. Law enforcement, no matter how big the law enforcement agency or how small, can't be everywhere at all times. And chance favors being prepared, and that allows a citizen to be prepared. If a person chooses not to carry a concealed one, that's fine, too. If they want, they can be kind of a sheep, able to be fed upon by the wolves, and that could happen.
Well, you look at some of these places where you've had, I'll call it an outbreak of gun violence. I mean, it makes it sound like it's kind of a virus, but you have somebody who comes in there who's shooting, and it's always a gun-free zone. You know, it's a school, a movie theater, someplace where they've told everybody you can't take any weapons in.
Right.
So the only one with a weapon is the bad guy.
Correct. And many of these cases throughout the many of these cases that we've seen occur throughout the nation have been persons with mental health illnesses and going into these places. There needs to be much more mental health services and mental health programs for those individuals, and perhaps a better way of looking for or accounting for those people with mental health illnesses that could be a danger to others. It's kind of a slippery slope. You don't want to have a big database of people with mental health issues, but if you have mental health issues, you probably should not be having or possessing a gun.
Sure. Well, we see people on the street all the time, you know, I think in every city, and you think...
Sandy Hook was a huge tragedy that occurred. The person that caused that was the mother of the shooter. She went out and legally purchased firearms, one of them being an AR-15 type of weapon, AR platform. And she knew her son had mental health issues. She took him out to shoot and to train with him a little bit. as a way of trying to dealing with his mental health issues. That was probably not a good...
Okay, that's a really weird conclusion to come to.
It is, but that's what was out in the media, and of course we know if it's in the media it has to be true. but she did take him out, and that was confirmed, take him out into shooting. Then she failed to properly lock up and store the guns. He had access to them. He gained access, loaded them up, and then went down to the school, and all the carnage occurred. That was a mental health issue, and improper storage of the guns around a person that had mental health issues. It wasn't the fault of the gun.
Yeah, you know, you always hear that. Well, if we got rid of all the guns, we'd stop all this. Well, they'd just use... I mean, literally, if we were able to take away everyone's guns, including the criminals... Before we had guns, we stabbed each other.
There was bow and arrows. There was rocks. There was clubs.
Yeah, I was going to say we whacked each other over the head with large pieces of wood. I
mean, right. But there are about 80 to 100 million gun owners in the nation and about 300 to 400 million guns that are owned by them that are accounted for. And so when you start looking at the percentages overall, granted, these are tragedies and people are dying, and I feel sorry for that, but... medical malpractice, more people die from medical malpractice from some surgeons and doctors or in auto crashes or because of heart attacks or cancers, but we're not banning automobiles or trucks, high-capacity vehicles that carry huge loads and can kill somebody. You don't see that. Or you don't see the banning of airplanes when they crash because they're a high-capacity carrier.
Yeah, that argument is totally ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think about, too, hey, well, let's have gun turn-ins. Well, those don't work either, because usually it's the law.
The buyback thing?
The buyback, or some have gun turn-ins and just for free, but others have gun buybacks. Those don't work. Those are the law-abiding citizens that I don't know what to do with my gun, and I'll turn it in. And in some cases, there are no questions asked, and criminals are turning in their guns to upgrade. Hey, I can get $100 for my Saturday night special, and then I can go out and buy a better gun.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's no questions asked, they can get a straw person to go in and turn in the gun, get the money, and maybe that gun was used in a crime. There's no questions asked, so now they're destroying evidence.
Right. Now, how did the whole buyback thing work in Australia when they turned all theirs in?
They still have guns that are in the country, and they still have a spike going up with gun violence.
In Australia, though you're not allowed to have, supposedly their whole country doesn't have any guns?
You got guns in the outback in different places.
Sure.
I mean, you can look that up. I mean, same thing, too. If they had mandatory turn-ins here, not everybody's going to turn in their gun. And even confiscations, you're going to still miss them. Like I said, with trying to find 400 million guns, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, kind of unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. And we were chatting before the program in the news break there, and we were talking about the history on the Second Amendment. So how about Bob? Are we good to go?
Sure.
All right. We'll take a little break and then come back with that. I know you said you had 3 hours of material, but
we'll try and condense it down.
We're going to do the condensed version because,
right.
You know, I just get sick and tired of saying that, you know, if you don't hunt, you don't need a gun, and that's what the Second Amendment is for. That just
Second Amendment has nothing to do about hunting.
That just makes gun owners go berserk.
Yeah.
But, you know, we should put some history out there.
Okay.
And so that way people will know that that's wrong and why. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back with the sheriff, chatting a little bit more about guns.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart. Give a damn's busted. These days I go down to Walmart and they settle them in the back. Some people want to take them away. Why don't you go busting for us and sell it crack? Guns, whether Remingtons or Glocks. Come on, man. Slanging them on the block. I'm gonna tell you once and listen some. As long as I'm alive and breathing, you won't take my guns.
Well, there you go.
If there ever was a time when
Hey, before we move on to the history portion, what...
of the program?
Of the program, yes. Talk to me about the no-fly list.
There has been some controversy about the no-fly list and some thought processes of, if you're on the no-fly list, should you be restricted from the ability to purchase firearms or even maybe have firearms? And that's a very debatable issue. My gut instinct would say, yeah, that makes common sense, but then what's the criteria for getting on the no-fly list? And is there some type of due process if you get on there, and how do you get off? Wonder if your name is John S. Smith, and there's a whole bunch of John S. Smiths, and you're on that list.
Yeah.
How can you get your name cleared off of there?
Yeah, and that's the big concern, because I know it's there's no due process to get on the list, but it could take a long time to get off the list.
Oh, yes. Just recently, someone contacted me, and they were restricted. They said that they were a prohibited person from buying a firearm. And they did some research, and the person had never basically committed a crime, and found that a court in California and a law enforcement agency had messed up and confused him with another person by the same name and whose date of birth was off by one day. And now he's trying to get that squared away. I helped him out and met with him and called the law enforcement agency and spoke to some of their records clerks, and they said, yeah, this has happened before. And so he may end up having to go down to court and prove himself that, hey, this is really me. I'm not the bad guy, John Smith. I'm the good guy, John Smith. And that's going to take some time and money, unfortunately.
And that can happen a lot. I mean, you know, when you look at how many people own weapons or want to buy a weapon, and, you know, how big the country is.
It's a big world.
It's a big world.
You can have the same name.
And it just takes one person to make that call.
There's another fallacy out there. The president said basically, in error, I know that's shocking, but the president said that it's easier to buy a gun than it is a book. Nice. Well, obviously, he's never purchased a gun, because even in states that do not require a state background check, all firearms require a background check through them when you're buying them through a dealer. It has to go through a federal, national information check system, instant check system. It's called NICS. Mm-hmm. And that has to go through them. Some states don't restrict purchases from private parties. You can just make it
right. And I think that's a loophole they're trying to close up. These gun shows, you can walk in some states.
And in California, you have a mandatory 10-day waiting period.
Even at gun shows, right?
At gun shows, because you have to go through a licensed firearm dealer to be legal in California through there. And so all those things are only affecting law-abiding citizens. The 10-day wait period was developed after JFK was assassinated, and then it was designed as a cooling-off period, so you just couldn't purchase a firearm and walk out with it at the same time.
And we voted California to get rid of that in California as well, and they've got that back in court, don't they?
They do. It's a court ruled in favor and basically said if you were a concealed weapons holder or if you had purchased a firearm within the last, I want to say, month or so, you did not have to wait 10 days and go back through all the requirements for that.
That does seem kind of stupid, because cleared. You already have a weapon, mm-hmm. so it's like you wouldn't be...
Right.
But yeah. I think that only applies to long guns. I think handguns, aren't you restricted to one handgun every 30 days?
Yeah, one a month. Mm-hmm. And so that is a restrictive there. Okay. So, you know, the history about the Second Amendment was interesting. I did some research for a friend of mine and ended up, you know, writing pages and pages of how it all developed, and was kind of surprised myself, so I got to learn a little bit in addition to that. But the Second Amendment says that, as I think through all my pages here, Second Amendment says that a well-regulated militia, being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. A pretty simple statement, but that's what causes a lot of heated debates and polarization within our legislature and our nation. And the Second Amendment, that you didn't hear nothing in there about hunting. So it's not about hunting.
Yeah.
It's
did you hear that a lot?
Or self-defense. It's about whether the Second Amendment recognizes the right of each citizen to keep and bear arms to state governments, and empowers each state to maintain a military force. So it's not about the military either. It's about the militia. The militia was about individuals protecting the state rights. And it actually started developing from our forefathers even before they came to America and wanted to declare their independence. But basically, through Old England, Charles II molded a militia loyal only to the throne, and then disaffected persons who were not allowed to assemble and seize their arms. And that came about from the Game Act of 1671 and led to the seizure of firearms by other than those who were qualified to hunt.
Mm. And interesting.
Then later, Parliament passed a law that said seized firearms and had to be returned to the subject so they can keep their arms as to be allowed to expect to accept for poaching. So they regulated that. You can't go out and commit a crime, but they wanted you to be able to regulate it, and they weren't allowed, not allowed to stockpile, but allowed to defense of their home and themselves. And then later there was a civil war about it. And then Blackstone, who had the Blackstone Law Dictionary, said the right to keep arms was an absolute. And another guy, Harrington, believed that an armed population was a popular for government's best protection against enemies, foreign and domestic. Where have you heard that before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
In our oaths of office that we all elected officials and many government workers take. And in Japan did not want to invade the United States on our home ground because a Japanese general said that they believed that they would not be able to win that because there was a gun behind every blade of grass.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to the armed public.
And I think that's still a concern with a lot of foreign countries. I mean, when they think about invading this country, that would not be an easy task.
So a militia was a body of people, and it was not the military. And even our founding forefathers, when they were developing the Constitution and the amendments, there was a lot of discussion amongst them on how about arming citizens. And there was the two groups. There was the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. Both sides believed that the main danger to the Republic was a tyrannical government. And remember, they came from England mm-hmm. and under that tyrannical government. And then the ultimate check was an armed population. And they had disagreed on several issues of whether it was there were sufficient checks to balance and balances in place of a national government to control oppression. And then the Anti-Federalists believe that the Bill of Rights should be incorporated into the Constitution to guarantee these certain rights. And both sides agreed that citizens had a right to be armed, and it was an essential element to preserving liberty. And if you look through history, too, the countries that have had strict gun control or have been under the charge of a dictatorship, all of them have led to this, has started out with the seizure of firearms mm-hmm. From the common person. It went back to ancient China, and then that's how the development of flailing instruments, such as nunchucks and some other flailing instruments, that's how those became weapons because they were used to separate the rice from the chaff, and those were flailing instruments. They later developed mm-hmm. them into weapons. And then we saw genocides that occurred in Nazi Germany. It started out with the seizure of firearms and books from the public. And then when they had no way to defend themselves, the government was able to rule over these people. And then, of course, the genocide occurs. And it's occurred in Poland and other countries as well.
So what do you think? You think it's just kind of ignorance from people who think that we need to get rid of all the firearms, that that's going to solve the gun violence problem?
I think it's ignorance can be maybe a little bit of a negative word, but I think it's a lack of understanding to fully understand where our Second Amendment rights come from for the importance not to be disarmed, not only for self-protection, but to be avoided by getting ruled over by a tyrannical government. And no way am I condoning to say, let's overthrow the government, but that's what the Second Amendment was in place for.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, the police are not required legally to protect us. Because if they were, then any of us that got hurt and a policeman didn't stop it, they'd be on the hook.
And you can't be, far as the peace officers, you know, I've been doing this job for 37 years as a deputy sheriff and been about 8 years as sheriff of this county. My hat's off to my brothers and sisters in arms of law enforcement throughout our nation. We do a great job. We're the ones that pull on our gun belts every day and go out and face unknown and known dangers. We're the ones that are running to danger versus running away from it.
Okay, you guys deal with all the people we hope we never meet.
Well, and then if you saw on the recent news blasts of the incident down in San Bernardino, one San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputy was leading a group of people out of a building. And he said, basically, and I paraphrase, basically, I got this, and I'll take a bullet for you before anything else.
Oh, that's right. I did
and
hear that
interview. Gone viral over the internet and news. And that's what we do. 9/11, there was men and women of law enforcement, NYPD, and the other law enforcement groups running into the building, along with our fire brothers and sisters running in there to save lives. And then we've seen just this year alone in the United States, there's been about 117 officers killed in the line of duty. And although less than half of those have been from gun violence. So there's been a good majority that have been killed by traffic accidents, both driving fast or getting hit by another vehicle.
Sure. I mean, if we didn't have guns, you know, to go back to it, we'd have bows and arrows and swords and sticks and,
you know, there was
stuff happens.
There's been a lot of discussion about the which I don't like the label of the militarization of police.
Mm.
That's where we've gotten a lot of our development of our protective equipment and firearms is from the military.
They test it all out and then you guys can use it.
Yeah, before Vietnam, sure. There really wasn't any SWAT teams. And then after Vietnam, as our men and women were coming back from the war, that's where some of them started to develop special weapons and tactics for the calls. And that's how SWAT developed. We have fully automatic weapons. We have armored vehicles. There was at least 5 armored vehicles that were deployed down in San Bernardino for the protection of the officers and for protecting the people. Armored vehicles started out in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Those are necessary for us to do our job, help protect the community, and help protect people.
See, and the bad part is when you see those instances where, you know, the person's in all the bulletproof stuff and, you know, and they've got the helmets on and all that, and it looks scary, you know, especially when it's something that's sort of benign and they go running in there in their SWAT gear. And that's what people are constantly being shown.
And
they don't show where it actually goes.
And there's a way for law enforcement to acquire military equipment that isn't being used. It's called the 1033 program. And put used to it. We
it's
can get
a way
that
you can get equipment that basically your county can't afford. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
you know, like for an MRAP, and an MRAP is a mobile mine resistant vehicle. Those are heavily armored, but those can be used in civilian for law enforcement, just like an armored vehicle.
Sure,
they cost about $750,000, almost $1 million, but you can get them free from the military and go. From
well,
there.
And at the end of the day, I guess properly used, the taxpayers have already paid for them.
Oh, absolutely.
So as a taxpayer, I mean, when you just look at it from from the nuts and bolts of being a taxpayer, you've already paid for it.
Well, right. I think the key, there is
you.
Properly used, and I think that's where a lot of folks are really kind of coming unhinged on that whole thing is why does law enforcement have to have this? Because they have been used in situations a little bit aggressively. But
sure, like
would you want to be a law enforcement officer and have to tackle what was going on down in San Bernardino without one?
Yeah.
I mean, chase a guy down in a squad car that's shooting automatic weapons at you?
Or if we go back to the North Hollywood bank robbery that occurred in Los Angeles, there was 2 well-armed criminals who had very lengthy rap sheets. That's your criminal history for those on the East Coast. And they had armed themselves with fully automatic weapons, either altered them or purchased fully automatic weapons, also covered themselves in body armor, and the law enforcement, LAPD, was not able to bring them down because they had handguns. And so they had also amped themselves with painkillers, and so they could not feel pain, and they were out shooting up out in the city as they exited the bank. And I think there was 2 officers that went to a nearby gun store and said, hey, give me one of those and one of those, and started loading magazines to take it back to the gunfight because they did not have the rifles to have at least on an equal footing there.
And so our gun laws and all that are, I mean, it's irrelevant.
And then shortly
after that,
circumstances LAPD acquired quite a number of used M16 rifles from the military through the 1033 program.
Mm-hmm.
And so these two individuals were well-armed, had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rounds of ammunition, and went to rob a bank and then came out and engaged law enforcement.
Who had revolvers. And
yeah, and it was a result of the SWAT team. There were some on-duty SWAT officers that responded, and some were off-duty. And you saw one of them running up. It was like he was in tennis shoes and shorts. Well, he was off-duty, had his equipment, ran to the danger, and teamed up with his colleagues to neutralize the threat to these individuals were doing to law enforcement and to the public.
Hmm. When we come back, let's talk about what an armed public, not running around, you know, waving guns over their head. But I mean, what does an armed public do for crime in their areas?
Because
we've got some interesting stats on that a lot of times get buried in the media stories. So, take a really quick break. We'll come back with the sheriff, talking about the Second Amendment, gun rights, stuff like that. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You wrote a stranger one fine day. Hardly spoke to folks around him, didn't have too much to say. No one dared to ask his business, no one dared to make a slip. The stranger there among them had a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. I could afford one. If I did just a little less drinking. Time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over.
It's always a good time, isn't it?
That was a pretty good bump music there, Bob.
Yeah. Got a lot of... I mean, that's got to be target rich, eh? The gun topic.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot out there in the musical universe.
Nice.
We have some talk on the chat about whether Shasta County has a... MRAP or any of the local counties have MRAPs. What do you say about that, Tom?
Well, for an MRAP is a mine-resistant mobile vehicle. It's used in the military, very heavily armored against IEDs and other types of military weapons. And so we do not have an MRAP here, but we do have a Bear. It's also a Bearcat. It's like an armored car, if you will, an armored truck.
It's like a Brinks truck.
Kind of. Yeah. It's a little bit smaller than that. But it can resist. It has bullet-resistant glass in it, bullet-resistant armor on it,
tires.
And bullet-resistant tires as well.
Because the drawback on the MRAP is that it's super, super heavy.
It is very heavy, and then oftentimes for a civilian, and it's very wide, and it can be top-heavy, so you can't. It's not like a patrol car you can go speeding around in. It takes a while to get there. And so it can also break down the roads. And if you're in county areas, and we're in a rural area in Shasta County, if you go on dirt roads, especially it's been raining here recently, that thing will sink out of sight due to its weight. You could break through a septic system as well and cause some problems due to its weight. So, but there are law enforcement agencies that have them. They've acquired them free from the military and can be very useful. A Bearcat, I think, is around $400,000 price, and that's pretty spendy for any agency, but especially small agencies.
But if you could if you could pull something like that up on a city street, you could shield a lot of people behind it.
We could. You could rescue people with it.
Yeah.
You'd be able to deploy or insert law enforcement closer to the objective. We used it here about a year or two ago. There was a person barricaded and shooting from an upstairs apartment. And as our SWAT personnel pulled up in our armored vehicle, the person fired upon that. That vehicle took some bullet strikes from the suspect. Our SWAT team returned fire and then neutralized the individual that was in the up in the apartment, meaning he was killed.
Right.
Fully rehabilitated, I thought, is what that was.
It, some people have referred to it as that.
Well, you know, I think another thing folks need to realize is you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was a different world. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, cops didn't run around with automatic weapons, and you know, like my dad was law enforcement for 30 years, and he told me one time in his whole entire career he had his gun out of his holster one time in the line of duty. Law enforcement today, almost every day you run mm-hmm. into something, and it's different.
We're in pursuits, finding armed subjects, and the officers have to have the tools to be able to do their job, and some of those tools include, of course, sidearms, sometimes with a lot of ammunition. They have their standard shotgun, which here is a Remington 870 pump-action shotgun. And then our standard-issue rifle is a Ruger Mini 14 mm-hmm. with 20-round magazines. And many of the officers carry their own AR-type rifles, usually in .223, but some have .308s and capacity magazines.
But you've got to remember the criminals have those, too.
They do.
They didn't have those before. I mean, mm-hmm. but now they do. And so, if you don't, you roll up on a scene with a revolver. I mean, you're in trouble,
right?
Yeah, you're in deep trouble. So, okay, what about these cities, especially big cities or large cities mm-hmm. around the country that have super restrictive gun laws? You know, you're basically never getting a concealed carry permit unless you're the mayor, or, you know, Dianne Feinstein or something like that, and. So your citizens technically don't have any guns, and yet they have massive amounts of gun violence.
You can take New York, Washington, D.C. I know that's not a state, but it's a district.
Sure.
High crime rate there, very restrictive on guns. Chicago.
Chicago's a poster child for gun laws.
Just over the recent holidays of Labor Day, 4th of July, they had something like nearly 30 people killed by gunfire, and at least that many or more that had been wounded. Very restrictive. Well, it wasn't the law-abiding citizen going out and do that. It was your drug dealers and thugs and criminals running around killing people and rival gang people, and unfortunately, people get caught in the middle of that too, innocent people. I mean,
exactly.
There's kids that
they always
get an errant round.
Some poor child.
Yes.
Okay, so what about the places that have had things like that and have then decided, you know, maybe we should allow our citizens to own firearms?
Generally,
what's the statistic for places where people own firearms?
You could do, of course, a Google on this, and I'm not going to give specifics, and then, of course, you know how statistics get utilized.
Right.
But generally, the states that have more what I consider reasonable, and some people would say lenient gun laws, where people can have guns, have less crime.
Hmm. Imagine that.
City of Los Angeles. The chief there is very concerned about high crime and violent crime that has been spiking recently. They're very, very restrictive on guns in Los Angeles. In fact, they recently passed an ordinance to ban magazines that have greater than 10 rounds. Well, there's already a state law for that, and so that's preempting state law, and that's why myself and 29 other sheriffs decided to sue the city of Los Angeles and say, hey, we already got state law on that. There's no law enforcement exemption, so like an off-duty law enforcement officer traveling into Los Angeles or traveling through the city of Los Angeles would be in violation of that ordinance. That didn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, so, and how do the restrictive magazine things, what does that do?
Again, if you're proficient in the exchange of your magazines and meaning for reloading, you can reload well under 1 second. And so you could have a lot of 10-round magazines.
And it doesn't keep the criminals from having...
No, they're going to go and get them. Yeah. You could go to here, and you could go to an adjoining state, Oregon and Nevada, and illegally purchase them and bring them back into the state. But
it's legal to get them there.
It's legal to import them into California. But the criminals,
they don't care.
That's not going to restrict them.
No, they don't care. They're going to buy them.
Right.
What about the new laws concerning school zones?
In California, you can't. It's 1,000 feet within a school. You cannot possess a firearm, or that's even driving through a school zone. So if you're on a roadway, you'd actually technically be in violation. And currently, at least for a few more weeks, if you are a concealed weapons permit holder, you can carry on school grounds, colleges, and universities. As of January 1st, the governor signed into law a bill that prohibits that now. You no longer have the exemption, so you cannot carry on a school ground your concealed weapon. unless you have the permission of the school superintendent, which I don't know if any school and superintendent will allow that to happen.
So anybody who's going there to shoot people knows nobody's going to shoot back.
Right.
Until the police respond, which mm-hmm. could be...
There was an incident a number of years ago down in Los Angeles where an active shooter came onto a school campus, and there was an off-duty officer on the school campus, and he engaged the suspect and killed him. And had he not been there, there could have been more carnage. Right.
Yeah. I just
the media says, hey, citizens don't intercede, and they don't prevent that. That's because it's not reported by mainstream media.
Not that it doesn't happen.
That's right. In Portland, there was a shooting in a mall there that was going on. And a citizen with a concealed weapons permit saw that. He took cover being defined as something that can stop a bullet, withdrew his weapon, and the shooter saw that this person had a gun, and then took his own life.
Wow.
So it stopped it
mm-hmm.
by seeing that.
Right.
And so there's an excellent video that's also put out. You see a lot of these things about active shooters, and that could occur anywhere in your town, USA, small or large. An excellent video by L.A. County Sheriff's Department put out on responding to mass shootings or an active shooter, and it's for mainly the civilians or schools, and it's about run, hide, and fight. So if you can get out and run, and run away from the danger, your chances improve about surviving the incident. If for some reason you can't run, and this is like a, I don't know, 20 to 40 minute video, if you can't run, then you hide and try and hide behind cover. Again, cover prevents a bullet from going through it. Concealment conceals you. It could be like behind a curtain. That's concealment, but a bullet can pass through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then fight is you can lock a door, hide under a desk, do some things like that. And then fight, if you can't do any of those things, use improvised weapons. It could be a broom, a shovel. You could take a fire extinguisher, hit a person over a head with it, or discharge the fire extinguisher in the person's face, and then try and get away.
And this is it's a video where?
You can go to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I think it's lasd.org, if I'm not mistaken. And then you'd have to find it on their website there. But it's very good.
I'll find it and post it. Have to take a last really quick break, and then we'll come back with some final thoughts. Got to talk some about the police shooting thing, because that's all on our chat room. People are talking about that. So we should find out how much of that is happening, really, or how much we're just hearing about it. And causing all that? You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Jingle bells were ringing, I said, hey, take your deer and get flying. A voice says, ho, 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 how are you? Merry Christmas to you tonight. I said, it's 3 a.m., I don't need toys, I got a machine gun under my bed. So keep off of my roof, or I'll have to blast your candy ass out of that sled. I say, hey, you, get off of my house. Hey, you, stay off of my house. Hey, you, get off, you big louse. Don't hang around, or I'll shoot you down from this house.
What a cheerful Christmas song.
never heard that one, Bob. Wow.
How do you
mix? That was messed up on several levels. Yeah. It was supposed to be Frank Sinatra covering the Rolling Stones.
Nice.
With a Christmas rewrite.
How do you jam up Santa and guns, huh? Yeah.
So just before the break, you were talking about some questions from the chat room.
Check.
Check or Chuck?
Check.
And so what were those questions?
Roger that, Red Rider.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously big in the news these days, you know, are police shooting citizens, armed and unarmed. The bad part is a lot of them are armed. You know, the Michael Browns and that kind of thing, you know, they were running toward them, not away from them. But the actual, you know, when the story finally comes out, that part gets muddled on page 10.
Right.
So, there are bad policemen. And there are people who shoot, policemen who shoot people and they shouldn't have. And
in fact, we're seeing that in, is that in Chicago? Where is it where the officer is being prosecuted for murder from the shooting?
That's Chicago.
Yeah, in Chicago. Law enforcement is part of society, and that's where we that's where we recruit our people.
Sure.
And we do backgrounds, and we do psychological examination. We try and recruit the best people that we can to work there. But we're also human, and humans do make mistakes, and they're also bad people. Some of them become in law enforcement. That's very unfortunate, but law enforcement as a whole is very well trained and very well vetted in their hiring processes, at least here in California. I can't speak for every other state. And then on top of that, what you don't hear from the media is the literally tens of millions or perhaps even hundreds of millions of contacts every year by law enforcement throughout the nation. And those are generally good contacts. The ones that end up that are bad contacts with citizens' complaints or a bad shooting or a corruption, those are less than one half of 1%. It's still bad, but overall, law enforcement, we're the last line of defense between an uncivilized, chaotic society and an organized and civil society. We're that line.
There's no perfect way to do it.
No.
You know, there's just no...
Gee, there's people that go into elected offices like the legislature that end up being corrupt and taking bribes. Here in California, we had a state senator who was a big anti-gun state senator.
Leland Yee.
Yes, and he ends up hooking up with a gangster, a shrimp boy, and dealing in fully automatic weapons to organize crime and others.
And his name really was Shrimp Boy.
It was.
Yeah.
And Yee got sentenced to federal prison.
Yeah, he was actually trying to broker a deal on shoulder-fired rockets from, what, Muslim Brotherhood or something?
I don't know
out of
who the group was, but here, like, he was like Mr. Anti-Gun here in California, one of them. And there he is brokering fully automatic weapons and shoulder-fired rockets. It's unreal. So
yeah,
it does happen.
You should look up Leland Yee just for fun if
you
haven't already.
If you get a chance, no matter where you may be, but if you see a law enforcement officer, thank him or her for the job that they do. That can mean a lot. I try and remember to thank our veterans, if I know a person's a veteran, for the job that they've done for our country.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes for your law enforcement, because generally when people don't know who to call, they call law enforcement. And when there's an emergency, they call law enforcement. We're the ones that come and respond to the calls and try and handle the incidents.
And in the meantime, you recommend people get some training on firearms?
I do.
If they're interested in that?
And get good training, and it's ongoing training. So it can be from an NRA-certified law enforcement instructor. Depends on what your state laws are. In California, there's instructors that are certified by law enforcement. And then there's other places, some good training, like on the West Coast Las Vegas area is called Front Sight. Good place.
Yeah, that is a good organization.
Nice. And I put the Surviving an Active Shooter link on the page. So
and learn a little
bit
more.
Thing's there.
Go to the California Rifle Pistol Association website, Gun Owners of California website, Gun Owners of America, and NRA, and learn a little bit about your rights as a citizen to have guns.
Because owning guns is not about hunting.
That's right.
That's not the Second Amendment is not about hunting.
Thanks for coming in, Tom. We appreciate it.
Enjoy it.
Thanks. Well, fellas, we survived another 2 hours. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week.